It is time now to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for the Media Beat. David joins us live on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast it during the weekend. Also, after our 12 noon news on Monday, and there's never a lack of things to talk about. So let's bring in David right now. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Good to be with you again, reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York City, where we're marking the beginning, the kind of official beginning of summer. A new sound in the city, I can report to you. The audio beginning of summer, even if it's not quite the official beginning of summer. We've got this whole new sound through Manhattan and the other boroughs, too, of the city's playgrounds having their water turned on. Their water sprinklers are now gushing and the kids are running through them and all that joyous sound. It suggests that, yes, the seasons are turning. And though the Memorial Day weekend may not be a beautiful sunny weekend, because we're going to get water of another kind direct from the heavens, but nonetheless, we know here in New York that summer is about to begin, simply because the kids are sporting so enthusiastically through sprays of water.
Well, let's take a look very quickly. And what's interesting to note is the countries that are now coming forward and recognizing the genocides that they were involved in. And those countries include England, includes the United States of America. Germany is the latest to admit. These aren't really apologies, but these are admissions of misdeeds.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a process. It's a process, and it's contagious. I think it's a good thing that people are looking at their own history and recognizing the truth. And you get interesting developments like President Macron from France visiting Rwanda, one of its own former. You know, it was in its sphere of influence, but it remains in France's sphere of influence. France has this interesting relationship with its former colonies. It doesn't quite treat them as colonies anymore. Of course, it can't. But on the other hand, it does seem to exert a considerable influence still and tries to cultivate them consistently. And you had an interesting case of that non-apology process that you often get from leaders now in issues like this. He acknowledged France's role in the massacre back in 1994 when more than 750,000 people were massacred. And his position there was that France does recognize what its role is, though he didn't go quite as far as many French people would have liked him to do and say that France could have stepped in at the time to prevent it. But the acknowledgement was enough to be, a very big story in France and a very big international story, too. And it's, as I say, part of a process that is almost worldwide now. There will be places, of course, where people just refuse to acknowledge the sins of their forefathers, just as they refuse to accept their own sins in the current day. That's particularly true in autocratic regimes. It always has been, probably always will be. But yes, the recognition is a spreading one, and it's to be welcomed, I think.
And before we move on, just one other final note I want to bring up and get your opinion on. To me, yesterday signified really the total transfer complete of the Republican Party, when even Paul Ryan is basically thrown by the wayside. And anybody that knows Paul Ryan, whether you agreed with his politics or not, knew that he stood for a conservative Republican Party, and he stood as a strong Republican leader, and he is now basically he made his speech, but that speech basically after that, Republicans basically drummed him out of the party.
Yeah, kicked the whole question that he was trying to raise off to the sideline again. or autocracy still a matter to be discussed. And extraordinarily enough, I mean, although we've always said it couldn't happen here, it's an old phrase about American politics, it couldn't happen here, referring to autocracy and the other sort of heavy-handed forms of government that can prevail around the world. It was believed America is somehow in some special magical way immune to it. But in the Republican Party now, you've got all the signs of autocratic leadership being exerted by its failed leader from the last presidential administration. And without mentioning Trump's name, Mr. Ryan was clearly talking about Trump and his grip on the party, and his effort to do that was rewarded with, as you probably could have expected, him being drummed into silence by the tom-tom beats of Trump sympathizers saying, "No, the only truth is the truth spoken by our glorious former leader, who is still, of course, in effect, the party leader. We don't have such an office in this country, a party leader, but in essence, that's what the man in Mar-a-Lago is managing to be still for the Republican Party. Now, that may well influence in great degree the selection of candidates and upcoming primaries, whether or not it's going to continue its force into the next general election, and we'll see a rerun of Trump's effort to get into the White House one more time, is a very open question. I myself think that it's going to be a bit of a stretch, but on the other hand, I have to be honest and say I can't, in any real sense, see a track. If I was a reporter trying to predict how things might go politically, I'm not at all sure by what process we would end up with in 2024, the party selecting consciously and deliberately Donald J. Trump to be their candidate again. But it looms as a terrible, terrible threat for now.
All right. Do we bring up the fanfare?
Let's hear the fanfare, yes. It's my way of awarding a bit of admiring praise to a piece of very good media tech reporting this week. I like to find the good and praise it, as in the words of Alex Haley. And this week I saw a good piece of journalism in that rarefied field of media tech, which sometimes is even actually hard to understand, let alone appreciate its journalistic value. But it comes from the Washington Post, from Jeffrey Fowler, the technology columnist there. And it's a wonderful piece of straightforward reporting, which has a touch of welcome diatribe about it. Especially if you are a tech fan. And of course, we all have to be, to some degree, appreciators of technology these days. It's essentially about Apple, a company that is clearly, you know, the lead, has the lead in many different ways, financially and technologically. But it's a smart headline on the piece. It presents itself as a kind of bill of rights for we citizens, but particularly we citizens who carry around with us the ubiquitous iPhone. The headline is, "I trapped all the things that Apple won't let you do with your iPhone," and then he promises to deliver an iPhone as Bill of Rights. It revolves around fundamental and very basic elements of iPhone ownership. For instance, consider you might, as I don't, for instance, you might not, as I don't, like the sound of Siri's voice on your iPhone, and you might want to replace it with another voice assistant. The apps do exist, but don't bother with an iPhone. You can't do it. You just can't do it. Do you want to send iMessages to someone with an Android phone and not another Apple iPhone? Well, no, you can't do that either. You want to back up your iPhone to something else besides Apple, Apple's iCloud. You want to serve your material to Google Drive because you use Google Drive in other parts of your life. Well, you can't do that either. If you're technically minded and want to get repair parts for your Apple, you would like to order them to, and use them on your phone, no, you can't do that either. And if you ever want to transfer your digital life onto a different kind of smartphone to get altogether, if you want to change, well, good luck. You can't do that. You may have an iPhone, but it's not really yours to do exactly what you want to do with it. And Apple's reason for making all these very strict rules about what you can and cannot do with your iPhone is, of course, outwardly, it sounds like a very reasonable one. Apple says it's protecting our security and our privacy. But it's become clear over the decades, it may have once seemed a very iffy thing to have in your pocket, a complete computer that other people could hack. But it's now clear that now that iPhones are so much part of our life, the way that Apple actually controls our iPhone is not really just for security and privacy. It's to do with Apple controlling us so that Apple itself can make more money. And we, you know, it goes from everything from the case of Epic Games that wants to get into the Apple App Store and can't because Apple says no, you can't. Right through to all these tiny issues to do with what you can and cannot do with particular pieces of technology. The source of all this all the time is quite clearly revealed by Fowler's work here. He's found it's not difficult to find a piece of quotation from Apple's original founder, Steve Jobs, because he said very clearly that the point of all the iPhone rules is to ensure that people don't switch away from having an iPhone to something else. It is a kind of, as the headline says, a kind of eye trap. The iPhone is an eye trap. So a good piece of journalism, as I say, a bit of a diatribe, but that points up the essential truth of all the disturbing features of Apple control that Fowler has successfully managed to list here.
You know, and you go back to the founding of Apple, and Steve Jobs was very upfront about it. His computer was not going to interface with any other computers.
That's right.
And he didn't want any foreign software going into his computers. That's the way he decided to operate, and that's the way they operate now. And
Tim Cook, his successor, has said very clearly that he doesn't want to see his customers, buy an Android for their preteen children. Every move they make is to ensure their own market leadership.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I found workarounds on getting photos off the iPhone and storing them on my computer.
But it's you're one among very few, I think.
Well, no, what I had to do, and it sounds crazy, is I had to buy a used Apple laptop, and I was able to through the cloud move the photos to that, and then once on the network, I was able to move those photos to an offsite hard drive that I have. But a normal person shouldn't have to go through that to transfer photos that they have on their own iPhone and transfer them to now the digital frames that are out there and your own computer and you can in your own television, as a matter of fact. You can do them
absolutely.
Now.
Yeah. Well, Apple. I'm an Apple fan. I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I've almost always used Apple products, and right from the beginning. Though, of course, I've had to switch back and forth, and depending on what particular project I'm involved in and with what partners. But we go right back. You're quite right to the Apple co-founder Steve Jobs right at the beginning, and the quote that stands out from this piece is. His very clear words, he says, our object is to, and I'm going to quote directly here, tie all of our products together so we further lock customers into our ecosystem. So there you have it. And you know, inevitably, you get a backlash from customers if you do that. And it's interesting to see this Bill of Rights being presented by the Washington Post for those people who do want to fight back against Apple's form of entrapment of us all.
Now, when you bring up ecosystems, Joe Biden comes to my mind because, of course, he has ordered the intelligence agencies to do a review of COVID-19 and could it possibly have been leaked. That's going to be a hard review because, obviously, China is not going to agree to allow certain things to happen.
Well, it already hasn't. China has already proved made it very difficult, proved itself uncooperative in the world setting. It put very strong restraints upon the international investigative team that was sent under the auspices of the World Health Organization to make its organization. And that report was in essence a joint report made between the WHO investigators, excuse me, and Chinese scientists themselves. So it's always had a cloud of uncertainty over it. This perception that the Wuhan beginnings of the COVID pandemic were from the origin came from the animal kingdom in the form of animals in a wild creatures market that existed, because it's now closed, of course, in Wuhan City, and the suspicion that the alternative possibility that it in fact originated in a Wuhan virology laboratory, government run, of course, as all such things are in China, that has always been in the air, and it's been dismissed at various times, but with varying degrees of credible authority. And Trump tried to do was just jump on that particular interpretation and say that was the truth, and of course turned it into a sort of racist ploy throughout his mismanagement of his own mismanagement of the COVID pandemic, and kept calling it, as you know, the China virus. Well, it undoubtedly came from China, but whether it was a deliberate piece of government or even just an inadvertent piece of government action that resulted in it spreading in China and then, of course, from China is a difficult question to answer. And Biden, understandably, I think, is impatient with the inconclusiveness of this swirling information. He wants a clear answer. Well, it's hard to see how he'll get that, but then again, we do pay these intelligence agencies an awful lot of taxpayers' money to be able to establish determined and certain truths. So let's hope that we can get some clarification out of it. So I'm not that hopeful. I mean, as you say, it's hard to know how that could actually happen, at least, you know, not least because of the passage of time now, and being able to reenact or replicate the process by which that virus got started amongst humans is going to be a very hard call for any investigator to complete.
And I guess we can head towards the home stretch here with, once again, another mass shooting in this country.
Sure, San Jose, and a transit operation hit this time. It's a workplace shooting. You know, we even have our subcategories now of mass shootings. A mass shooting, by the way, officially counted as anything over four victims. And in this case, of course, we had 10 people in the end involved. And, you know, every one of these is a heart-sinking occasion. And every time, there are calls for gun control and the NRA, the much battered at the moment NRA, the National Rifle Association, battered because of its appalling mishandling of its own affairs, coming out so clearly in court proceedings. They will do the usual thing, say very little, but then reapply their own lobbying skills, their own very effective lobbying skills over the decades to ensure that no legislation to change this country's approach towards gun sales and the appallingly freely available free availability of fairly unrestricted, at least, availability of guns to all and sundry, and the process just goes on. The cycle just continues. It's always disheartening to read it, and I wonder just when we're going to come to our senses. I just never know. I just never know how things can possibly get better when even the worst possible massacres take place, like, for instance, in your own state at Sandy Hook. Still, you know, events like that still have no lasting effect. And it's one of the saddest elements of American society that journalists like myself have had to report on for many, many decades now.
You know, and you look at why it's not going to go any place, probably, is just take a look last night. I went to C-SPAN before I was set to go to bed. I wanted to see about the vote on the January 6th commission. And once again, legislation before that, everything was slowed down to a crawl where nothing happened.
Sure.
It basically is, we all say, political tribalism, that it just doesn't matter. Nothing happened. It slowed down to a crawl, and now that crawl will continue today.
This may be a disturbing way to think about it, but I kept hearing yesterday, away from the, in a sense, far away from the subject of gun violence, but I kept hearing people talk about the anathema, and that was the word that was used, the anathema of people being forced, Americans being forced to take the vaccine. And the notion of American freedom was bandied around in this discussion in a way that I found peculiarly evocative of the gun control discussions that we by force of habit go through every time one of these terrible massacres happen. There's some notion of American freedom is that, you know, you can't make people do things. You can't tell people that they have to do something for the common good, for instance, which is certainly true of vaccination. And it's arguable that this could be true, you know, that for other matters like public safety, other forms of public safety, like protecting people from crazy individuals who have guns in their hands. But to say that somehow or other, because we're American, we cannot be told what to do in our own lives is an interesting, a slightly skewed, not slightly, a very skewed version of what personal liberty is all about. If you have the freedom not to take a vaccine, you're obviously free to, you know, inflict ill health, perhaps death, on other people. If you say that any attempt at gun control is an encroachment upon your personal liberty to hold a gun, you're spitting in the face of the idea that some things like public safety overall are more important than individual liberties. Now that's a deep philosophical argument that it may be, difficult to get into, but I think it needs to be faced. People, Americans often seem to think that individual liberty can take them into realms of complete personal lack of responsibility, and that I think is what we're meeting at the core here. And when you see, as you did on C-SPAN, a sort of everything in political movement forward being slowed to a crawl, I think that's the sort of principle that's at work. Americans don't want to have their so-called liberty interfered with, and I think that can be a kind of blinker or a blinder on people's view of how society operates. We all must make sacrifices individually for the general good sometimes, and of course I would have thought gun safety would be one of them, just as vaccination is clearly one of them.
You know, I'll close with my comment that over the years, I've never, ever denied people who just don't believe in vaccinations and never have. I've never denied them their right not to, because they were basing it on the vaccination itself. The problem with this country now is everything's not based on what they're going to skip or not skip. It's based on your political party, and it's not based on the vaccine itself. It's based on what your political party is telling you to do. That's the most absurd thing that I see that has developed in America, and that it's no longer you're choosing because you've investigated something and you've decided, you know, it's not for my family. You choose it because your party chooses it.
Yeah. Tribal loyalties. One of the things that people who are in the business of trying to establish objective truth find themselves up against all the time. It's hard to do straightforward reporting of something that you want to get established as a consensus, some notion of what is an absolute truth that you can confidently report to the public when everybody's perhaps not everybody, but the vast majority of people seem to be wearing blinkers that are dictated to them by a sense of which tribe they belong to, and that's a lamentable state of affairs for this country to have gotten itself into.
David, it's always great talking to you. We'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to that.
Take
care.
Bye-bye
now.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat. Of course, David can be found at his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we present him here live every Friday morning on Robinhood Radio. And as I said again, on Mondays after the 12 noon news and at various times over the course of the weekend. Once again, themediabeat.us. Or you can find him on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, click on the Media Beat with David Tarachuk.